Welcome back to the 76 Capital Sports Leadership Show. My name is Wayne Kimmel, managing partner of 76 Capital, the sports tech venture capital company. On this show, I interview top sports entrepreneurs, athletes, and executives who are shaping and many times changing the sports business industry. Today, we're going to talk sports betting and sports media with Charles Gillespie, the co-founder and CEO of Gambling.com. Charles, welcome to the 76 Capital Leadership Show.
Thanks, Wayne. Very happy to be here. Hopefully, we can provide your listeners with some good insight on the gaming industry. My background is definitely on the gaming side, more so than sports per se. But we definitely have a very significant and growing sports betting affiliate business, which I'm happy to talk about.
Well, Charles, we're excited to have you on the show. And yes, it's our sports leadership show, but it's everything about gaming and media and everything around all the worlds that you play in. And just love to hear from your perspective and how you created gambling.com.
Well, we didn't exactly start with the domain name gambling.com. My business partner, Kevin, and I were both from Charlotte. Both went to UNC. I got it into my head that I wanted to start a legal and regulated business in the online gambling industry when I was coming out of university. So I graduated in 2006. And, you know, at the time there was no legal online gambling in the States. So the big idea was, okay, if we can't do it here, we'll leave and we'll just do it somewhere else. And at the, you know, in the beginning, we didn't have much resources capital wise. So it didn't seem to make sense to mount a full blown online gambling operation, like as a licensed operator. We basically started with affiliate, you know, where we, essentially review online gambling websites and compare them and drive traffic and new depositing customers into the online gambling operators themselves. That's where we started in the very beginning in 2006. And we ended up building one of Europe's largest affiliate businesses in the online gambling industry. And I've spent basically my entire adult life now in Europe. And Kevin, my partner, has been kind of back and forth. He did a stint in Dublin and also New York, but he's now back in Charlotte, leading the charge for us in the US. We're over the moon that America has finally unconfused itself about online gambling to a certain extent, and is now joining the rest of the world in regulating what, you know, most people see as a pretty routine and benign form of entertainment. And since 2018, it's been all hands on deck to kind of turn the ship around and point it at the U.S.
And so you mentioned Kevin is in back in Charlotte, and where are you?
I'm based in Monaco. So at some point I discovered the south of France and fell in love with it. And I realized maybe the best place for me at the time, I moved here over 10 years ago now, and the most relevant place for me to have been at the time was probably London. But I didn't want to live in London. I love London, but being there 12 months of the year felt like a bit much. And there's 15 or 20 flights, daily direct flights between Nice and London. So I said, I'm just going to set myself up with a little bit better weather, a little bit better scenery. And if I need to go to London, I'll go to London. And thankfully that's worked out. And I suppose somewhat ironically, a number of years decided to set up in Dublin instead of London. So our global HQ is in Dublin. And now I take that Dublin flight a lot more often than I take the London flight.
Well, gambling.com is a publicly traded company right now. You took the company public back in 2021. What was that process like?
It was surreal. It was eye-opening. It was incredibly expensive. I think if you're going to land on one adjective above all else to describe it, expensive would probably be the most fitting one. The bit of the history is we actually thought about listing the company in Europe at one point. We've got a couple of large publicly traded peers in Europe, of all of which are traded on the NASDAQ Stockholm Exchange. And that, at a certain point in time seemed to be just what you did with one of these large affiliate marketing companies. You put it on the market in Sweden. And we had started making moves in that direction, and then PASPA happened. And we hit the brakes on that because, we realized, wait a minute, okay, maybe the future of this industry actually really is going to be the US. I mean, that's, economically speaking, that's what always made the most sense, but there was just so little movement on the regulatory side. And then, the dam kind of broke, and we were like, well, okay, if we're going to marry ourselves to a stock exchange, we should probably do that in the US and not in Sweden, given that we're also the only one of these companies that has American founders and predominantly American management. So, we pulled back and started the process to list in the States in 2020. In 2020, you started to see a few of the European companies come across. GAN made its move over, which was very interesting. They saw a quite a significant difference in valuation when they completed their transfer over to the US. And then, we were also in the midst of the kind of SPAC, when SPAC was not a dirty word, when it still held some cachet as a reasonable route to market. So there was all the, various SPAC deals, of which, of course, there were many gaming SPAC deals. So it took a year. The hardest, we had to move the company out of Malta, the top co. Our kind of holding company for many years has been in Malta. And we realized that nobody has ever taken a Maltese company public in the United States of America. And we didn't exactly want to be the first people to figure that out. So we changed the jurisdiction of the company to the Channel Islands, to Jersey, not New Jersey, but Jersey. And that gave us.
We have to clarify that for our listeners and viewers, right? Jersey, not New Jersey.
you would be forgiven for making the mistake. That's for sure. We got set up in the Channel Islands and, as part of that process. And, that's just kind of, it's kind of a neutral third, kind of non-EU, non-US kind of jurisdiction where, which just works from a kind of financial plumbing standpoint in terms of a US listing. And it's easy enough for all of us to get to have board meetings. So we moved the Topco to Jersey. And the hardest part of the entire process, Wayne, to be honest, was the accounting. Of course, with public companies, you think the accounting is a big deal. And, our auditors previously were PricewaterhouseCoopers in Malta. And we thought, obviously that's good enough, right? And then we began the process and we realized, oh, no, you need this special sort of audit to be listed in the United States. You need a PCAOB audit, which is unique to the US, and us as a European company. There's not so many European companies that are listed in the US. So there's not so many of these auditors in Europe, which specialize in the special audit you need to be listed in the United States, because most companies in Europe, they list in Europe, they don't list in the US. So we really had to thread the needle to find an auditor that could do it. And at the same time, we're in the middle of kind of peak frenzy in the capital markets. So we weren't exactly the only company trying to go public, so these auditors are under huge demand. I mean, they're just turning business away left and right. But we found ourselves an auditor. We got everything audited. We engaged an investment bank, and then we put a few more banks on the deal team, and we got the deal done. And the week we went out in July 2021 has been described to me as the single busiest week for IPOs in the history of the American capital market. I think there were 21 or so different IPOs that priced that week. And, wow. you know, we're a couple of hundred million market cap company. We weren't exactly the largest of those 21, you know, so in terms of getting attention, it was maybe a little tougher than expected, but we got the deal done, and we've traded for the most part above our issue price in the intervening 10 or 11 months, and have definitely grown the business very substantially since the date of the IPO. So capital markets are a little rough out there recently, but you know, we focus on what we can, and the underlying business is stronger than ever.
Well, Charles, I mean, I have to ask you, you know, I'm looking at you now, and is you know, you said you're in Monaco, but you have that beautiful picture behind you of you and looks like your team at the at the stock exchange. What was that moment like for you personally and building the company and then being able to take it public? I mean, it must have been a pretty exciting time.
It really was, Wayne. You know, so that's the picture from the bell ringing ceremony, which NASDAQ offers certain companies. We rang the closing bell, and we did that in, I think it was October, November, and we did the listing in July. So we didn't actually ring the bell until a few months later. But it was really the kind of moment we needed to draw a line under the entire process, because, you know, I think it's quite similar to like selling a company. What you'll hear from people that sell their companies, you know, especially in like a big deal for a you know, a nice valuation, is that there's no joy in it. Is it's this horribly tedious process that gets dragged out, and you know, you think you're going to be wearing a Gucci suit and on the top floor of some skyscraper with a Mont Blanc pen and a glass of champagne, and it's going to be, you know, something out of a Hollywood movie. And the reality is you're in your underwear on Zoom at 3 o'clock in the morning arguing with lawyers about some you know, arcana, which really isn't very relevant, but it's critical to getting everything done. And that was kind of our experience. We got it done, and it was just everybody, I think, just wanted to sleep. And after a couple of months, we were back on our, after a couple of days, we were back on our feet, and with the bell ringing at the end of the year in October, it really did give us the kind of moment we needed to take stock of what we actually achieved, because we are now the first and only affiliate marketing company in the gaming industry, it publicly traded in the United States. And we're very happy to be the first, and we'll see how the market in the US develops for these sorts of businesses in the future. But being the first was very important to us.
Well, let's talk about the future. I mean, what is the future for gambling.com and the overall affiliate market, and how you think things will sort of shake out over the next, you know, couple months, you know, through the summer into football of 2022, and how do you think things are gonna shape out?
I think, you know, everyone at this point is really focused on new state launches. You know, when are these new states gonna come online? And you know, there's been some information coming out on Ohio. You know, some people were hoping that would have been, you know, maybe around football season. It sounds like that may not be until January. I think if you look over the next kind of 2 years, you know, it's really about when new states will launch. You know, Kansas has just gone through. It sounds like they're going to try to move relatively quickly and will hopefully be online by the end of the, like possibly well before the end of the year. You know, when we talk to our kind of political insiders in the states, the center of the lobbying effort for the rest of the year is likely to be in North Carolina and California. Of course, DraftKings and FanDuel have got this. I think BetMGM's involved. They've got this as well. They've got this ballot initiative in California where they're trying to, you know, get the people of California to vote in favor of regulating in a fairly reasonably open and commercial way online sports betting, and they're are certain stakeholders in California that are opposed to this measure, to say the least. So it's shaping up to be probably one of the most expensive and nasty political fights in American history. So, you know, pass the popcorn. We're going to see some real fireworks in California going into the end of the year. But if it goes through, I mean, that will be absolutely monumental.
When you say monumental, so what does it mean? What will it mean, or what does it mean for you when a new state comes aboard for you and your company at gambling.com?
Well, it's a couple of things. One, you know, to borrow kind of investment banker language, the TAM expands, right? So immediately, you know, we just have a bigger market to make money in. There's suddenly a block of people that can legally bet on sports that couldn't previously. There's also a huge amount of excitement about the first kind of weeks and months of the market opening, where there's just a lot of general interest in the market. It's kind of a foot in the door to additional states regulating. You know, there's very much a neighbor effect. When one state regulates, the states around it start taking it more seriously. And when a state regulates sports betting, that means they're more likely to they're one step closer to regulating online casino games, which, Wayne, is where the real money is at. You know, there's, you know, if you look at the UK, like twice as much money made on online casino than sports betting. You know, sports betting actually is kind of a low margin business, and in many respects internationally is used as a player acquisition tool for the online casino side of the business. So, you know, sports betting is great, can be very profitable, but the real big win for the gaming industry is to get online casino in as many states as possible.
And right now in the U.S., if I'm correct, I believe it's 5 states have iGaming. Is that correct?
Yeah, it's New Jersey, Pennsylvania, Michigan, and then you've got some, iLottery and kind of stuff at the margins elsewhere as well.
So that's something that you're hopeful that some of the, you know, the over 30 states that have sports betting that don't have the casino side of it, that they move into that, you know, that would help you and your business.
Yeah, and it helps everybody, right? I mean, it helps all the sports betting operators. For them, it's like huge as well, because then they can spend more money to acquire sports players, because the sports players, you know, then naturally wander into the casino. It can be quite blurry lines. You know, you'll have, for example, you'll have, a cohort of users on a large international online gambling operator, which identify as sports bettors, right? They're men, they talk about sports all the time, they bet on sports all the time. But then when you look at the actual economics of that cohort, okay, they lose $200 a month on betting on sports, but they lose $400 a month playing online blackjack. Okay, well, like, that's actually an online casino player, even though they self-identify as a sports bettor, just in terms of where the money is going. So not that the American online gambling operators need to be more aggressive on marketing and advertising, but if they had that online casino channel up and running, it would enable them to invest even more in acquiring players. But that's a whole nother topic. And, you know, we benefit from helping these operators, onboard new customers, but we're very sensitive to there being too much kind of in your face advertising in the market, you know, TV, radio, outdoor. You can't kind of avoid that, right? And if there's too much of that, there will be a blowback there. I mean, you've already seen this. There will be a kind of popular resistance to the presence of these companies. And if you think very long term about the future of this industry in the US, it's, or any market really for that matter, it's about finding the right balance of all of these things to have a sustainable and long-term healthy relationship between the industry and government and the public. You know, it should not be in your face. And
isn't that one of the things that you do at gambling.com, where you are looking to, you know, almost find the appropriate players for the industry and not be so much in your face, but these are people that are, you know, you're trying to find the best customers for the operators out there.
Yeah. I think the key thing to bear in mind is that many of these affiliate businesses, they're really driven by search. Okay. So if, you know, a lot of the traffic coming into gambling.com or any one of our other 50 websites will predominantly be from search engines, mainly Google, right? So, and when you have somebody that goes out and actively searches for something, they have a question and they're looking for an answer, you know, that they're pulling that advertising and that information toward them. They're not having it pushed upon them. And that is a subtle but very critical difference. You know, so what we and all the other affiliates do, you know, if there's a spectrum of like what's reasonable in terms of online gambling advertising, and you've got, you know, on one extreme end, you've got like a billboard outside of like an elementary school, like that would be, you know, obviously ridiculous. You know, on the other extreme end of the spectrum really is the affiliates, because the affiliates invest a huge amount of money in their content to help educate and inform people that would like to gamble online how to best do that. You know, where, you know, first of all, which operators are actually regulated and legal or not. Okay. And then, you know, where's the best bonuses? Who's got the best customer service? Oh, I want to play this specific online slot. Where can I go to actually get that slot? Oh, I really care about PayPal as a deposit method. You know, so which operator has this slot and can accept PayPal? You know, you'd be surprised how many, you know, how granular it can get in terms of what people are looking for. And in that way, you know, it's these affiliate sites are very kind of, they're like consumer advocates, consumer empowerment. It should never be controversial from an advertising perspective.
Well, as you know, at 76 Capital, my team and I are all about, you know, investing in the next thing in sports and gaming, really trying to find the next technology or entrepreneur or an entrepreneur who's truly pushing the limits. I mean, do you see, or are there certain things that you're looking for or hoping for within the world of gaming, from moving things forward from a technological perspective? Are there certain things that you're hoping for, looking for, building on your own, or that you just think that could really move the industry forward?
You know, we could equally describe ourselves as a performance marketing business that just happens to be in the online gambling industry. So, you know, we spend a lot of time thinking about performance marketing, about conversion rate optimization, search. We are obsessed with the speed of our websites, you know, anything that can kind of result in more positive user engagement that we can really control. So when I think about innovation, I think about it a lot in that respect, you know, in terms of also data science, you know, and how well we can actually match users on our properties to the potential online gambling operators that would be relevant to them. You know, within the industry, what does that mean? We work with over 200 different online gambling operator groups. Many of those have multiple B2C brands. So the number of B2C brands is many more than 200. And you know, what's important to us, it's people that know how to handle this traffic. You know, if you send people a bunch of traffic and nobody registers and nobody deposits, or one of those things is broken, well, those people have not found what they are looking for. You know, the proxy for us for customer satisfaction is high conversion rates. You know, to the extent we suggest somebody should go to, be it DraftKings, FanDuel, BetMGM, or anybody else, you know, did they actually succeed in setting up the account, funding it, and making a wager? And those conversion rates between different operators in different markets on different devices at different times of day vary enormously, like more than you would probably ever guess. So any innovation in the sector that kind of oils that customer onboarding process is very relevant to us, because the operators that convert the best are the easiest ones for us to work with.
Well, Charles, I mean, one of the things that, you know, we love to do on our 76 Capital Sports Leadership Show is to hear a little bit, you know, more about you personally. As you said, you went to the University of North Carolina earlier. I'd love to also hear, you know, over your career and in your life, were there certain mentors that or individuals who have, you know, shared really great information or knowledge or stories with you that have inspired you to be the leader that you are today?
Yeah, for sure. In terms of mentors, I had the great fortune to meet Mark Blandford, who's the founder of Sporting Bet. So Mark is an old school English bookie to a certain extent. He used to have a chain of betting shops, and then he discovered the power of the internet and kind of pivoted immediately to build one of the first online sports betting businesses, which was Sporting Bet. And he ultimately listed that company in London in, I think, 2004. It was one of, if not the first, publicly traded online sports betting companies. And I hooked up with Mark in 2008. I got introduced through a mutual friend, and he thought Kevin and I were doing something very brave, which I at the time I thought, you know, was very flattering. I think now that I understand English nuance a bit better, I think it might have meant something a little different. But you know, we've been working with Mark now for, you know, going on 15 years. He's our largest shareholder of the business today. He's the chairman of the company, and he's definitely been a mentor to me over the years, for sure.
What were some of the things that you learned from him, or that he's shared with you, or helped you really in building the business?
Well, he's an entrepreneur, right? So he's got a lot of patience. You know, when things break and go wrong, you can kind of tell if you're dealing with an entrepreneur or you're dealing with somebody that's got an MBA that's kind of maybe never built a business from scratch. And, you know, with Mark, he's always been very, very patient. I mean, that's more than anything else. I think he's been patient, because this was not an overnight success. It really took Kevin and I some time to get product market fit, if you will. And yeah, I mean, just I think, you know, he's been, you know, I think, you know, don't get too excited about the record months, and don't get too hard on yourself about the car crashes, right? You know, when something's going really well, it's probably not going quite as well as you think it is. And when something feels like it's the end of the world, it probably isn't the end of the world. You know, it's just staying kind of trying to stay in the center of the lane, you know, regardless of the weather is has served us well over the years.
What are some of the things that you share with your team, and how do you get them, you know, excited, and how do you inspire them every single day to help you build this business?
You know, I think people want to feel like they're on a winning team. You know, people in general like being part of teams, and of course they want to feel like they're winning. You know, it's just satisfying. And you know, we're in a super competitive industry. We at the end of the day, we help people online, you know, there's a lot of money in this industry, right? It's a very lucrative industry. It's a fun industry. There's all kinds of conferences and parties. And if you wanted to, you could probably go to a conference every single week, right, in this business. And, you know, so I think it attracts a certain type of person, which is generally fairly fun loving. And we, within that group of people interested in working in the gambling industry, try to find the ones that are competitive and that care about results and know about the cost of failure and really want to win. And the kind of North Star that I've put out for everyone in the business for the last several years is organic growth. You know, a lot of our peers have done a lot of acquisitions to grow. And frankly, you know, several of those peers of ours are bigger than we are today. But principally as a result of those acquisitions. And, you know, my kind of view of the world is that there's no purer way to create shareholder value than through organic growth. You can also do acquisitions, of course, and be very strategic and grow those acquisitions and create significant additional shareholder value. But if you're not at your core fundamentally growing your own business, you know, eating your own dog food, as they say in Silicon Valley, then, you know, what does that mean? So it's been our goal to, for a number of years now, to grow this business to be the biggest performance marketing business in the online gambling industry. And we have, you know, steadily moved up the rankings over the last several years in a quite a deliberate way. And our organic growth has been in almost every quarter for the past several years at, you know, the fastest of any of our peers. You know, we've had an organic growth CAGR 2017 to 2021 of 50%. And that's what I'm proud about with our team. And I think, you know, moving forward, that's still very much a focus, but post IPO, we have, you know, significant financial resources now as well to grow inorganically. And we've kind of embarked on that chapter at the beginning of the year with the acquisition of rotowire.com, which, as many of your listeners probably know, is a historic American fantasy sports media business, really kind of the original in many respects. We love that deal and we love that team, and the potential there is enormous. You know, what are we going to do with it? Well, we're going to add on sports betting affiliate, basically. But, you know, the legacy fantasy business and the legacy DFS business, that's a great business. We're going to continue to invest in that business, and it's not going to change in any meaningful way. But they have essentially like a search marketing super site with RotoWire. You know, they drive an incredible amount of organic search referrals into that website now. And not so much of it is about sports betting, but it could be. And so that's really the future of RotoWire. And the second deal we did this year was for a business called Bonus Finder, which is run by a couple of old hands in the industry that really know their way around and are very, very good at doing exactly what we do. So that was more close to the core, if you will, about additional scale. They have a nice business in Canada, which of course, you know, with Ontario regulating in April, including online casino, is a very good market. It is already an interesting market, but you know, we and I think everybody expects Ontario to develop further into a very good market over time.
Well, Charles, this has been awesome. I think you're our first guest from Monaco on our 76 Capital Sports Leadership Show. It was great having you on the show. Really excited for all the things that you're doing at gambling.com. Excited for the growth, the acquisitions that you recently made this year. And just to see what's next across the whole, you know, gaming industry. So thanks so much for joining us.
My pleasure, Wayne. Look forward to following along on the next guests.
Well, absolutely. Really appreciate it and keep making it happen on your end. And that's what we'll keep trying to do. And certainly that's what we want to, really do it and try to inspire all of our viewers and listeners to go out and do some really big things like you've done at gambling.com. Once again, thanks a lot for joining us on our 76 Capital Sports Leadership Show, and hope everyone has a great day.